your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. All comments, views, and opinions expressed are solely those of the host, guest, and callers. In the next hour, Dr. Rosenthal and her guests cover both the common and the not-so-common health issues you want and need to know. Get your pencils ready. Here's your host, Dr. Sarah Rosenthal.
Hello, welcome to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, the program that reminds anyone coping with health problems we are not alone. The goal of this program is to discuss both common and not so common health issues with the experts who really know what they're talking about. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. I have a long career as a medical journalist and am the author of over 30 consumer health books. I have a PhD in medical ethics and medical sociology and direct the program for bioethics and patients' rights at the University of Kentucky. Today we are devoting our show to the subject of celiac disease and gluten allergies. My first guest today is considered a world expert in celiac disease. Cynthia Rudert, MD, is medical advisor for the Celiac Disease Foundation and the Gluten Intolerance Group of America. Dr. Rudert has one of the largest practices in North America, which is dedicated to celiac disease, and she treats patients from all over the world. She's also written the foreword to the second edition of Living Well with Celiac Disease, available at Amazon. Later in the show, Claudine Krangel, the author of the book, joins us, who also has celiac disease, who will share with us her lifestyle tips as well as some gluten-free recipes. Dr. Rudert is also president and founder of the Atlanta Women's Medical Alliance, which is the largest local alliance of female practitioners. Dr. Rudert, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
One of the things I always like to start with, especially when we're dealing with perhaps what is still considered an orphan disease, is to find out a little bit about specialists who really focus on these diseases. I'd love to know a little bit about your training and what really fascinated you about celiac disease to the point where you became such a devoted physician to it.
Well, I am presently in private practice, a solo practice, and started that after I left Emory University. It's interesting, Sarah, because in medical school I was always taught that celiac disease was an extremely rare disorder.
Uh-huh.
It was an orphan disease, and it was
right.
So rare that if you really did see one or two patients in your career, it's likely that you probably would miss one or both of them.
Right.
And when I went into private practice about 14 years ago, I remember meeting a wonderful British lady, and she had been to multiple gastroenterologists and had a long list of complaints and had been really fairly unsuccessful in finding out her answers. And I screened her for celiac disease, and she had celiac and underwent a small bowel biopsy. And I was amazed even at that time how someone could be so sick for so long and go undiagnosed. I became
amazing.
Fascinated with it after that.
That's amazing. Yeah, and often I find that when you're talking to practitioners about what has gotten them into, you know, their various interests, it's always that one patient.
That it is. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, perhaps you mentioned, could we get into a little bit about the actual prevalence and what the symptoms are and how you would go about diagnosing celiac disease?
Well, again, when I was in medical school, it was taught that this was extremely rare. So when anything is really thought to be extremely rare, you don't look for it very often. And it was fascinating to me that within the past several years, it took investigators, physicians, and scientists from other countries that came to the United States that started looking for celiac disease that really opened our eyes. And I'll give you several examples.
Oh, great. Okay.
Some of the leading researchers, Alessio Fasano, is from Italy. He's at University of Maryland. Joseph Murray, a delightful Irish physician from Ireland, who's at Mayo Clinic. Peter Green, who's presently at Columbia who came from Australia, and Stefano Guandolini and others, said, how can it be that the U.S. has so few celiacs? And they came from their countries and came to the U.S. and were at these various centers. They started looking for it because all the U.S. physicians said, no, prevalence is extremely rare, 1 in 10,000. Well, these investigators started looking for celiac disease, and lo and behold, with screening, which is your initial way you look for it, is with blood screening, they found that the prevalence was identical to that in Europe.
We just weren't looking for it.
We weren't looking for it. And if you don't look for something, you'll never find it.
Uh-huh.
Or if you mislabel it. A lot of the patients have been labeled previously with irritable bowel syndrome, spastic colon, chronic fatigue syndrome, a host of other illnesses. And, in fact, it was Dr. Green at Columbia who published that the average delay in diagnosis from the first symptom to when you get the diagnosis of celiac disease is 11 years.
That's unbelievable.
And that's an unbelievable amount of time, lost energy, work, money, financial health, emotional wellness.
So what are the symptoms of celiac disease, and what are the things that we weren't looking for that we now know to look for?
Well, it's another stumbling block for doctors is that it's a very chameleon-like disorder.
Okay.
It presents differently according to patients. You can have GI symptoms that can be diarrhea or constipation. And you might think, well, how could you have one or the other? It depends on the length of involvement. And we might want to back up and just explain to the audience if people don't know what exactly is celiac disease.
Yes, I think that, yes.
And,
let's do that.
And a lot of people now know because they'll come in and say, I have an aunt or an uncle or a brother with celiac. Well, celiac disease occurs in genetically predisposed individuals. So, number one, I think of it like a lock and a key. The lock is your genetic predisposition. You have to have one of the two genes for celiac disease.
Okay.
Then something's got to turn it on. You've got to have a trigger. We'll talk about triggers. But you have to be eating the toxic gliadin, which is wheat, rye, or barley.
Okay.
So what this does is if you have the gene, if you've been triggered, eating wheat, the most common thing in the American diet, can trigger an autoimmune reaction where your body turns against the small intestine and those microscopic villi that absorb our vitamins, minerals, and nutrients. I look at it, I hold my hand out in front of me, and you see your nice long fingers. Those are the villi, and they're microscopic in the small intestine. Well, if you bend your fingers in half, they're blunted, and that's what happens. The villi start to break off.
So it's a malabsorption disorder.
It's a malabsorption, so you don't have all your villi to absorb the nutrients that you need. So if a lot of the villi are damaged and you have 20 feet of small intestine, that's a lot. So it starts at the top of the small intestine and it can work its way down. So if you don't have much of your bowel involved, you may be constipated. If you have more of the small bowel involved, you may have diarrhea. You may have no trouble with your bowels at all and have just heartburn, indigestion, even no GI symptoms at all.
Wow.
And so, that's what also throws doctors.
So it's so essentially what happens is you're really suffering from a form of malnutrition. And it just depends how malnutrition manifests in the individual patient.
Exactly. And when you think of malnutrition, you don't have to be skinny, because most of us think, well, if you're malnourished, you've got to be skinny or thin. You can be malnourished and be obese. So you do not have to be thin to have celiac. You can be morbidly obese and have celiac disease.
I see. So this, when you're presented then with what sounds to me like a diagnostic puzzle at the best of times, there are probably exceedingly few physicians probably primary care doctors that can spot it, and then what is sort of the process of how do people get to you, and how do they even know that they need a celiac disease specialist?
Well, a lot of people, most of my patients that see me are self-referred. They make their own appointments. People nowadays are very savvy, especially with radio shows like you have, the Internet. They start to put in their symptoms. They're looking for answers. They're very understandably frustrated. And a typical patient that'll come to me, if it's not for a second or third opinion consult, it's, I think I have celiac disease. I think it's been missed. I've been told I have irritable bowel syndrome. Is this a possibility? Or my aunt has celiac disease. People told me lightning doesn't strike twice. And indeed it does. If you have a relative, that markedly increases the likelihood you could be celiac.
And in addition to, do people also suffer from sort of symptoms of general malaise, such as fatigue, or is there kind of like a package of symptoms?
That's an excellent question, because when I look at all the different symptoms somebody could complain about that has celiac, there's over 250 different symptoms. The most common one, in my experience, is fatigue.
It's fatigue.
The rest of them are variable.
Where do you think the fatigue is coming from?
Probably from chronic malabsorption, vitamin deficiencies, and sometimes even hypothyroidism.
Okay.
Because if there, and this is why it's so important for your listeners to know, if you think you might have celiac disease, it's a blood test to be used as an initial screen. And it's important, we'll talk about blood testing later, but it's important you get the correct blood tests that you need, because as the diagnosis is delayed, if you are celiac and you don't know you have celiac disease, we know from the Italian studies that the longer there's a delay in diagnosis, the increased likelihood you may suffer from another autoimmune illness.
So we're seeing a lot of, so essentially then, similar to autoimmune thyroid disease or some of the other, do you see that celiac disease sufferers tend to be, is it more prevalent in women
who
sometimes suffer from more autoimmune?
Well, celiac disease is undiagnosed.
Hold that thought.
Sure.
We're going to take a break now. My guest
Alrighty.
Is Dr. Cynthia Rudert, an internationally recognized celiac expert whose clinic is based in Atlanta. For more information on celiac disease or gluten allergies, we suggest starting with Living Well with Celiac Disease, just out in its second edition, available on Amazon. When we come back, we'll talk more about diagnosing and treatment for celiac disease. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com. All shows are archived on our site, as well as at Voice America Health and Wellness Network at voiceamerica.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit yourhealthpress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Stay mentally, physically, and emotionally fit with Younger Every Day, hosted by Dr. Bob Payson, broadcast every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Younger Every Day will offer you alternative solutions for a variety of health issues, all backed by clinical, scientific, and medical data. Dr. Payson and other expert guests will inform and inspire people of all ages to look and feel better. Younger Every Day. Think clear, feel strong, grow younger. With Dr. Bob Payson, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Do you know how health insurance is supposed to work and why some believe it's not working correctly? To find realities behind the myths, log on each Thursday at 1 o'clock Pacific Standard Time to Voice America Health and Wellness for Inside Health Insurance in America with Sharon Ault. Every show will peel back another layer of how health insurance has, could, and should work in America to benefit employers, employees, insured, and uninsured. You will also hear from industry insiders and high-ranking government officials, so join us every Thursday at 1 o'clock Pacific Standard Time for Inside Health Insurance in America, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found a small patch of plastic on my right shoulder.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial 866-472-5792. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal and our discussion of celiac disease. We left off before the break talking about the fascinating aspects of celiac disease and its relationship to other autoimmune disorders. And we're going to pick that discussion up and then talk more about the diagnostic workup and treatment. Welcome, Dr. Rudert, again.
Thank you so much. There is certainly an increase in other autoimmune disorders with undiagnosed celiac disease. And in fact, those same investigators I mentioned earlier would often chastise the American physicians and say, why are you waiting for someone to get hypothyroidism or diabetes or rheumatoid arthritis or even juvenile rheumatoid arthritis before you screen them for celiac disease? And there have been publications that show that once you are on a gluten-free diet with an adequate, not a long-term delay in diagnosis, you could prevent other autoimmune disorders. So that's what's extremely important about getting a diagnosis.
Oh, my. So actually going on a gluten-free diet can prevent another autoimmune disorder. Is that what you're saying? That's unbelievable.
And that is based on some of the Italian data that was published in our literature several years ago. So it's really imperative. And in fact, it's thought now by some of the celiac experts that no one should be given a diagnosis of irritable bowel disease or spastic colon before they are screened for celiac disease.
That's really interesting. And you know, there are so many people that are diagnosed with those, I guess what I would say, throwaway labels, because they don't know what else to call it.
And you know what's fascinating, and this really hits home about how common celiac disease really is? We know based on published data from 2 years ago that it affects 1% of the entire adult population. When something affects 1%, it's an epidemic. One out of every 100 adult Americans have celiac.
Really?
That's amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing. I mean, I guess one of the so essentially screening for celiac disease. So how do you do that? I think you mentioned a blood test, but what's sort of the whole diagnostic workup package?
Well, the package, number one, you have to, and that NIH, the National Institutes of Health, said if you don't suspect, if you see a physician that doesn't suspect it, you won't get diagnosed. So you have to have a physician that's up to date about the recent guidelines. And the first step, besides talking to the patient and taking an in-depth history and physical, is to do celiac blood testing.
Okay.
And there's two different things. There's celiac genetic testing, which is reserved for certain specific instances. But the first thing I do is called a celiac disease panel.
Okay. And so what are you looking at on the panel? Like what lab?
A complete panel should always, always include TTG. That's the name of the blood test, TTG.
TTG. And what does that stand for?
Tissue transglutaminase.
Okay.
Known as TTG. Then the other test should always include an EMA. It's called an anti-endomysial, E-N-D-O-M-Y-S-I-A-L, antibody.
Okay.
And a serum IgA level.
Okay.
I like to use it, the lab name is the Prometheus Celiac Panel out of San Diego, because it includes everything. It includes also the anti-gliadin. Gliadin is the toxic fraction of wheat.
Okay.
And it has the anti-gliadin antibodies. And the doctor just orders a celiac panel with Prometheus Labs. Other labs vary, but that's what you want to get number one.
How many people know about the celiac panel in the medical profession?
More and more are becoming aware.
More and more every day? Okay.
But what's frustrating, because I have seen some extremely smart patients that come in, and they've read, because just last month in Marie Claire, the magazine,
right,
was a whole article on celiac disease. Several years ago, Red Book had an article. Reader's Digest, it's getting a lot of press.
It's starting, it does remind me of the thyroid disease pattern, where it used to be that nobody had heard of thyroid disease, and then
right.
More. So it has a sort of the similar orphan disease, which it's an orphan disease until it's no longer an orphan.
No, now it's numbers are kind of staggering, and you wonder why there are so many celiacs.
Now, let's talk a little bit about, you may have more to say about the whole diagnostic workup, but I wanted to fit in some issues regarding treatment, what you would sort of do upon being diagnosed, or are there numbers, or are there things that you, are there things that you need to see on this panel that indicate?
Well, yes, when you get the panel, and again, I emphasize to anybody who's listening, regardless of the results, if the physician thinks that you are likely to have celiac, you should go to small bowel biopsy. And that's done when you're sedated in your veins, twilight sleep, and an endoscope is passed into the stomach and then into the small bowel. It's about a 10 or 12 minute procedure. And you get 6 biopsies approximately of the small intestine. Now, you use the blood testing to guide you towards making your diagnosis, but you have to realize, if I'm probably following over 600 celiacs, that you can also have negative blood testing and still have celiac disease. So the blood test should serve as your roadmap, your guide. But if you are EMA positive, you are virtually 100% certain that your diagnosis will be celiac disease.
Okay. So basically what you're saying is that the celiac disease panel is sort of an important marker, but it's not absolute, and you have to have you have to be followed up with other diagnostic imaging tests.
Exactly, because at this point in time, and I always say at this point in time, because medicine is very fluid.
Like a moving target, yeah.
It's like a moving target. Things change. But at this point in time, you need to have small bowel biopsies in order to make the diagnosis. Now, that's a perfect world, and many people come to me out of just sheer frustration. They've stumbled on the diet themselves, and they say, my gosh, I feel great. And then, do I have celiac disease? What do you do then? Because on a gluten-free diet, your villi will heal, and your blood tests will normalize.
So it presents an issue, because they're coming to you, and to absolutely diagnose them might actually be much more interfering their lifestyle.
It can be challenging, but I work with it with everybody because people are, it's wonderful if they've educated themselves about a diet that no one's told them about and they feel wonderful, and then they say, well, what do I have? And it can be problematic because I rarely, if ever, will ever recommend a gluten challenge. Because if you truly are celiac or severely gluten intolerant, and there's a difference.
And a gluten challenge would be having them eat gluten to see what happens.
And if you've been sick, and if you're a celiac or severely gluten intolerant, and you've been that ill, there's no way you would do a challenge to begin with. But some physicians I've seen recommend it to patients.
So sometimes you have to weigh it. So essentially, when you have... these shows tend to go fairly quickly, so sometimes I try to jump to some other information. But so let's say you've diagnosed a patient, you absolutely have a patient with celiac disease. Mm-hmm. Is the next stage then simply just going on a gluten-free diet, and that's the treatment?
You must be on a gluten-free diet, and it's a lifelong adherence to a gluten-free
diet. But there's
no
medication that they need to take.
Well, that's none. It's wonderful.
You know, there's a lot of diseases where if you could just where if you could just go on the right diet. I think a lot of people would be thrilled.
Right,
that
and you
treatment.
Avoid surgery, expensive medications, but it's something that you need to join national support groups, local support groups, read the books that are available, including Living Well with Celiac Disease that Claudine Krangel wrote, which is outstanding, and you need to arm yourself with information.
So one of the issues that I wanted to raise then is are there any insurance coverage issues for people with celiac disease? For example, I'm assuming that most of the diagnostic tests would be covered if they have coverage, but we see a lot of people, for example, who are diagnosed with diabetes who can't get insurance. Is this in any way a stigmatizing diagnosis for life insurance or health insurance?
Yes, it can be. Mm-hmm. I've had patients that were not able to get life insurance, and I have written letters saying that this is a healthy diet. In fact, there was some preliminary information presented at the international meeting several years ago that if a celiac is appropriately diagnosed, follows a gluten-free diet, they live longer than the general population. They're not eating processed food.
I see, because it's basically a fresh. Now I guess one of the challenges of a gluten-free diet, I guess this would be the best time in all of the history of the world to have celiac disease because of all the gluten-free products. But I know that in the 60s and the 70s, and even most of the 80s, it was quite difficult to stick to a gluten-free diet because we weren't catering to it. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, extremely so.
So people, older celiacs, had to learn to cook their own food, and now you can actually go out and buy things like rice crackers and
all the different great pastas you can try that are gluten-free, quinoa, Q-U-I-N-O-A, teff, and all those things that, as you mentioned, they weren't there 20, 30 years ago.
Right. One of the, we may be cut off by a break in a second, but one of the things I wanted to ask you about, it seems as though a gluten-free diet is being used as a suggestion. Oh, there's our break. We'll be right back. We're going to take a break now. My guest is Dr. Cynthia Rudert, an internationally recognized celiac expert whose clinic is based in Atlanta. For more information on celiac disease or gluten allergies, we suggest starting with Living Well with Celiac Disease, just out in its second edition, available on Amazon. When we come back, we're going to be talking to the Living Well with Celiac Disease author, Claudine Krangel, and she'll talk about her experience with celiac disease. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com. All shows are archived on our site, as well as at Voice America Health and Wellness Network at voiceamerica.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit yourhealthpress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Increase the quality of your life by decreasing the chances of disease and disability. Listen to Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. On the show, host Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff will discuss how to optimize your health span through hormone therapy, preventative medicine, proper nutrition, and more. Improve your vitality. Enjoy your life. Listen to Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century with Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific and 4 p.m. Eastern. Right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Women, do you feel that you're too old to be active, too old to be beautiful, too old to have fun, or too old to be fabulous? Well, if that's what you think, then there's good news for you. You're wrong. Tune in to Voice America every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Aging Outside the Box. Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell. Aging Outside the Box is a fabulous, fun program that gives you every reason to feel greater than you ever have. Host Shirley Mitchell and O.E. Cruiser Small will cover phenomenal topics such as women's issues, health, diet, exercise, nutrition, faith, travel, and many other concerns for women of all ages. Feel young, feel smart, and feel fabulous by tuning in to Aging Outside the Box. Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial 866-472-5792. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal and our discussion of celiac disease. Joining us now in this third segment is author Claudine Krangel, and she is the author of Living Well with Celiac Disease, just out in its second edition. This is a book that, if you don't have celiac disease, it's just fun to read. I mean, she's got amazing headings, things like, you know, I'm not a flower child, talking all about her. She's just got wonderful, wonderful little bits in the book. So, Claudine, what I wanted to ask you about is maybe you can share with us your experience as somebody who's living with celiac disease and somebody who's living well with celiac disease. And I know you've been to Italy and you've experienced everything. So maybe you can just tell us what led you to write the book and what are some of the common experiences.
Sure. Okay, it's kind of an open-ended start. I'll start with I guess a little bit of history about myself. I was diagnosed 34 years ago, back in 1972, and so I have...
So the days before a lot of gluten-free products
absolutely.
Were out. Oh,
yeah. Absolutely. Back in a day when you could buy a box of gluten-free pasta at the hospital, and I recall even back then it was something crazy, like $8 in 1972.
Oh, my God.
So basically, I didn't eat pasta until a lot later in life, but I'm probably... a little bit more rare case for celiacs, and that I've had it pretty much most of my conscious life. That said, it hasn't always been sort of a consistent experience. Back in the 70s, it was a really strange thing for a kid even to have allergies. It wasn't something where you'd go into schools like today where they don't allow peanut butter or anything like that in the classrooms. I was literally a bit of an oddity. And it was a struggle for my mom, too, because it was at a time when even doctors weren't clear as to what the disease meant and what kind of future it held or any of those things. And I just came in on your show late enough to hear Dr. Reuter talking about the biopsies, and that is something that I had done every year from the time I was 4 until the time I was 24. So we've sort of gone through stages, because even through the 80s, the doctors wondered if celiac disease was something that kids grew out of. Later, of course, we realized that it wasn't.
So it's not something that kids grew. You know, I think I remember hearing this myth as well, because I have a couple of family members that have it, and it seemed as though they had it as children, and then suddenly they didn't have it. But I never understood how that process worked.
Well, that's actually a really interesting point. I often talk to people who say the same thing to me. They say, "Oh, I was diagnosed with that as a kid, but I grew out of it," or "My brother was," or whatever. And I always urge those people to go back in for testing now, and the reason is this. The reason they believe, now, Dr. Reuter, please jump in if I don't describe this accurately. But from the way I understand it is that the symptoms of celiac disease go into a form of remission, and if not remission, then the symptoms themselves may change through adolescence. As far as I know, this is not, they haven't fully understood why this happened.
Could it be hormone related, Dr. Reuter?
Well, no, she's correct. No one knows. But it does seem like some adolescents go through what they call a honeymoon phase, or a phase where it becomes quiet.
Yes.
Huh. Interesting.
And now, that said, my mom will tell you that some symptoms remained the same. For example, moodiness or, you know, irritability. You know, I had certain things that happened to me that I realized later in life. I went through a stage in puberty where I started getting a lot of cavities, strange things that lasted for a phase when I was cheating. I went through around, the, I don't know.
What would you crave? What would you cheat?
Oh, my goodness, Sarah, everything. That was the phase where what I tried when I was a kid would usually show up with me throwing up somewhere embarrassing, you know, eating the entire box of Girl Guide cookies, you know, in one sitting because I was scarfing them down, you know, in the bathroom kind of thing. But once I was not having any kind of overt symptoms, I was eating pizza. I hope my mother's not listening to this, but basically eating all kinds of gluten-laden muffins in the high school cafeteria. And then I'd go home, and my mom would, you know, have gone to the bother to make a gluten-free meal for the rest of the family. And meanwhile, I was eating as much as I could during the day. And I wasn't getting sick. I wasn't having the same symptoms. So even I started to believe that this disease was something that I had grown out of, as the doctors had suspected could happen at the time, because they were biopsying me every year. And it wasn't until I had done significant damage that about around 17 or 18, the doctor sat me down and said, "Look, honey, you really do have celiac disease. We were seeing symptoms. We were seeing damage to the villi through the biopsy all the same."
What are the long-term consequences of this sort of damage? Maybe Dr. Reuter can speak to that. Like if you don't get it under control and go on a gluten-free diet, what happens?
Generally, you could trigger another autoimmune disorder. There's also non-GI problems that women and men can present with. One is infertility, mm-hmm. and that can affect both men and women. Also, a delay in onset of a woman's first period, and early menopause or premature ovarian failure.
This just smacks of the type of symptoms that a primary care doctor would just not know what to do with. And
oh,
it sounds
exactly
like you could just
right.
go anywhere. Just, you know, yeah. close your eyes, pick a point,
right.
pick a specialty, and that's where you might wind up.
Right.
But it's really unfortunate because so many of these folks are even labeled hypochondriacal.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
And Claudine mentioned you can have mood disorders, you can be depressed, and
yeah.
then people want to put you on antidepressants, and of course, sometimes they're indicated.
Now, Claudine, I think that one of the things that's so great about the book is, for example, you've got a whole chapter that's just sort of dedicated to the social scene and life skills, and you've got things about, you know, piece of cake, what to do with the beer and pizza party, you know, all of these types of things. And I'm assuming that these are, you know, these are obviously things that you've written about because it's coming from your own experience.
Oh, absolutely. And I would say that once you get used to the diet, which I am a great cheerleader of the gluten-free diet for a lot of people, aside from celiac disease, it's just a really healthy diet and a really healthy, great way to live. The problem lies in social areas where food is the center of attention. And a lot of emotional things are attached to food. I mean, for everyone, that's why we see, you know, emotional eaters or all kinds of other psychological issues that are tied and controlled with food. You know, there are really specific things that happen with celiac disease as well, in that when your food is somehow restricted in a situation where you have little control, it can be a really strangely emotional time. For example, even going back to the teenage years, you know, if there was a beer and pizza party, or you'd all be at somebody's house, bunch of kids hanging out in the basement, and they ordered pizza, there's this strange, you know, peer pressure, weirdness, not wanting to be left out, jump in phase, which, you know, contributes to a lot of cheating, the same way that kids do a lot of silly things they shouldn't do. I'm showing my age.
for some kids, it's getting into smoking. For you, it's having
absolutely
a piece of bread.
having a muffin at school, getting away with a muffin.
Jeez.
I know. But later, you know, even when that wears off, suddenly the pizza party shows up and everyone's having a good time and things are tied around that, and it's a strange alienation issue that happens. I don't find it so much anymore at a social gathering as much as I do, let's say, going to the office, and suddenly I get called into some meeting with clients, and somebody's taken, you know, gone to the hassle of ordering in a catered lunch, and I'm trapped in that boardroom, and in comes the platter of sandwiches.
Oh, yeah.
And I haven't eaten, and I'm starving. And I have to put on a brave face in front of all the clients, and I have to then answer questions as to why I'm not eating the sandwich. When everyone knows that we're going to go the whole day without food, and inevitably you end up telling your story over and over again. And then you have to do the whole, no, it's fine, it's blah, blah, blah. And then you have the whole, why don't you scrape the insides out of the sandwich? You know, it's always the exact, it's like Groundhog Day, those events.
One of the things that maybe we can touch on is what I find so fascinating about the gluten-free diet is that it's so difficult to know what has gluten. And you were talking, you know, they're the most unsuspecting sort of the innocent foods that you would never think could have gluten actually have gluten, which could be packaged meats, for example.
Well, absolutely, packaged meats, or I'll find, for example, let's go back to that platter at lunchtime, it's marinated chicken, sliced chicken, and people say, well, you can eat chicken. Well, I can see by looking at it as some kind of strange seasoning, could be dredged, could be, you know, could have sat in soy sauce, which is laden with gluten, you know, overnight at the caterers, there's no way to know or to control. So where, in those cases, if something is obviously, you know, a salad or something like that, I'll obviously jump in without asking any questions. Like, you get to know, but
you diagnose your plate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that what you get into? Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's lots of things you can do to protect yourself. There are lots of, as far as coping with the diet, even those situations, if you have time and you're able to prepare, you can always, the person who organizes with the caterer, you can always, you know, let them know that somebody's going to be there who can't have certain foods. And there are ways to protect yourself and take care of yourself. I'm talking about the emotional attachment to a situation where you feel like you have no control and how strangely that can really be overwhelming or awkward for other people if you don't know how to handle it.
So you have to learn as a person with celiac disease. Oh, we're going to talk about this in a minute. We're going to have to take another break now.
Okay.
My guest is Dr. Cynthia Rudert and Claudine Krankel, excuse me, and we're talking about celiac disease. For more information on celiac disease or gluten allergies, we suggest starting with Living Well with Celiac Disease, just out in its second edition, available on Amazon. When we come back, we're going to talk more about Adapting Recipes for a Gluten-Free Diet with Claudine Krangel, author of Living Well with Celiac Disease. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com. All shows are archived on our site as well as at Voice America Health and Wellness Network at voiceamerica.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Steps to a Healthier You. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit YourHealthPress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Growing up in America explores the challenges, risks, benefits, and differences this generation of children face each day. Hosted by veteran pediatric emergency physician and father of four, Dr. Charles Nzeka, this show is for parents, teens, and children. It crosses each generation. By exploring the unique aspects of matriculation within this current generation, we hope to find answers and ways of optimizing this experience for today's generation. Growing Up in America with Dr. Charles Nzeka broadcasts each Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt US Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Are you tired of being tired? Are you sick of sitting around while life passes you by? You can get back on track by tuning in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time. For Attracting Abundance, the energy of success with Carol Look. Attracting Abundance is the program that empowers you to finally break through your limiting beliefs and blocks and shows you how to succeed in all areas of your life, from improved financial abundance, health and weight problems, as well as your relationships. Don't wait another week to be joyful. Listen to Attracting Abundance, the energy of success with Carol Look, this Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial 866-472-5792. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal and our discussion of celiac disease with our guests. Author Claudine Krangel is on, as well as Dr. Cynthia Rudert. We're talking about the gluten-free diet, and Claudine is going to talk a little bit about adapting recipes for a gluten-free diet. Again, Claudine Krangel is the author of Living Well with Celiac Disease, available at Amazon. Claudine, let's continue.
Okay. I was saying to you actually in the break that I tend to, when I look at recipes, I do a lot of baking actually on my own. I shouldn't say that I don't bake. I do like to follow a lot of recipes done by Betty Hagman, which I think a lot of celiacs are probably very familiar with Betty. She's a famous gluten-free baker. But when it comes to baking things on my own, I tend to stick to recipes that are low in flour to begin with, gluten or wheat flour, and I will convert them using a lot of bean flours, chickpea flours, rice flour, combinations of different flours, and I talk about that a bit in the book, different combinations that tend to work well. I also find that recipes that have a lot of moist products in them, for example, banana breads or zucchini loaves, things that are made with lots of fruits and vegetables in them that contribute moisture and density to the product, will make for great baked goods. And again, I go into some detail on that in the book. But I think more importantly than the baked goods, which we do see a lot more products on the market already, you know, compared to what we were seeing even 10 years ago, is just looking at the diet in general and thinking about food in very simple terms. I think where we run into the biggest problem is when we think about food in the convenience factor that we think about it in today's day and age, where people go and pull a Lean Cuisine out of the freezer and stick it in the microwave and call it dinner, and we say, well, we can't eat that anymore. Now we have to cook. And
right, yeah, the lost art of cooking.
Yeah, and the reality is I do like to cook now. That was not always the case. But I do like to cook now. That said, I live alone, and it's not like I'm going to put on three-course meals every night for dinner, but I do eat really healthy. And whether you're cooking just for yourself or you're cooking a separate dish for yourself because the rest of your family is going to eat, you know, pizza or something, there are lots of really simple, healthy, great-tasting foods that you can have on hand that make it as convenient as anything else.
What are the critical cupboard fillers?
Well, certainly, you know, you want to replace your grains. I think that the first thing celiacs crave when they're pulled off of their wheat is their starch. And maybe having a few more interesting starches. You know, people think of rice as maybe instant rice. There are great, fabulous rices with different textures and just different flavors, basmati versus jasmine-scented rice or arborio rice used for making risotto, sticky rice used for making sushi. So rice alone, you could probably find five genres of regular rice in your everyday grocery store. That's before you get into specialty markets.
Now, could you have sushi?
Absolutely, you could have
okay,
sushi.
So there's no problem
soy
with sushi.
Sauce, but you can definitely have the, why can't I think of the name of it, the green
wasabi. Seaweed.
Exactly, you can have wasabi that's made from radish. But yeah, absolutely, sushi you can have. You watch the soy is really the problem, and it's not the soy itself. It's that a lot of brands use as a cheap filler, believe it or not, gluten, wheat.
I see.
And that
so you could actually have tofu?
Absolutely.
You could have tofu, but no soy sauce. See, it's,
right.
It's amazing how can see, and
well,
I'm sure people get confused.
It's the processing of the food. And, you know, it really comes back to the process. And I started thinking recently, you know, if we thought about food the way we did before Swanson put it in an aluminum tray, you know, food was food, and we knew what we could eat. It's now that we layer it with so much seasoning because it has to keep its shelf life, and it has to have flavor after we defrost it and microwave it and all those things. If you go back to simpler food, there's tons to have. It's just keeping it simple. You mentioned tofu, and I think that's actually a really important element, too, is protein. And rather than focusing the diet on carbohydrates, as I said, celiacs initially miss the carbs. So I talked about rice, of which there's also, you know, lots of corn products, polenta, lots of ways to have potatoes. Those are just your basic North American diet.
And you're seeing an explosion now of packaged gluten-free products.
Absolutely.
that were never available before.
No, and pasta. I mean, that's such a mainstay in our diet. There are, I would say, more than 10 manufacturers of gluten-free pasta available in North America, of which, you know, I list some in the book as well. There are a few. I've done lots of testing on those pastas. But I would say there are five fabulous ones that when we were living in Italy, we would serve to Italians and they wouldn't know the difference.
So really?
Just to show you how far gluten-free pasta has even come in the last 10 years. So there's the whole carbohydrate quarter, but then there's also simple foods. Nowadays you can buy cans of tuna with pull-off lids. You can take to work beans, tuna. You can cut up tomatoes. You can make a fabulous salad that's totally satisfying at your desk that's gluten-free. They actually used to laugh at me in my office, but everybody's used to my diet now. You don't have to eat rice cakes. You know, it doesn't have to. But now, you know, now I guess so many people are on all kinds of diets, and low carb. I mean, everybody's bringing their own food for their own individual.
And you know, it's funny in that now things don't get the second looks that they used to get.
Yeah.
And I'll add to that, while some of these crazy craves have, you know, like the Atkins diet and the high protein diets and all those things have come on with mixed reviews from the medical scene, what it has done is it's made everyone look at carbohydrates a little bit different. And if even that alone has helped celiacs, there are lots of other food products on the market where they're taking flour items and things like that out of it. They're trying to make it more high protein, less sugars, high. And all of these things are making people in general more conscientious. And the idea of cracking open a tin of, you know, tuna and having it with beans at your desk is not strange to anyone anymore.
I mean, I definitely have my tuna sometimes. What, one of the things I wanted to get to, perhaps I can throw this to Dr. Rudert, is I'm imagining that when you're working with patients, do you work with a nutritionist to help them with a gluten-free diet?
Well, I do my own nutritional counseling.
Oh, you do? Okay. So that's a huge part of it, I imagine.
It's a huge part of it because at the time, a lot of the nutritionists were not completely on board with the nuances of a gluten-free diet. And many celiacs will tell you some frustrating encounters there. But what's wonderful is Cynthia Cooper and Shelley Case have started DIGIT, Dietitians in Gluten Intolerant Diseases.
Oh.
So these are dietitians. If they're a member of DIGID, D-I-G-I-D, they are well-versed about the gluten-free diet.
Okay. Well, you know, one of the other questions I wanted to ask you about is you're hearing about gluten-free diets now for other diseases, such as, you know, they think that it might help with autism. They think it might help with sort of a range of other, what are your thoughts about this, and where do you think there is application for a gluten-free diet that's really valid?
Well, certainly there are a whole subgroup of individuals that have children with autism, ADD, ADHD, that find tremendous benefit in following a gluten-free, casein-free diet. As Claudine and the three of us mentioned during the break, it tends, for whatever reason, to be more embraced and validated by the alternative medical community.
Okay. And what about that? Is there a lot of evidence that suggests that it's helping? Like, what about the evidence-based medicine community? How do they feel about these diets?
I'm not so well versed about that research and it's the specifics of the autism.
Okay.
But when you look at children with autism, the small studies that have been done is there's not a higher percentage of celiacs. However, they do respond, some of these kids, to a gluten-free, casein-free diet.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's possible that now that you're talking about the prevalence of celiac disease, is it possible that some of the kids with autism also have celiac? So the ones that quote respond to the diet unquote are responding because they're actually undiagnosed celiacs. Is that a possibility?
That is certainly a possibility because we know that gluten in some cases can be associated with a wide variety of neuropsychiatric problems.
And Claudine, you were talking about as a child you had a lot of moody.
I was just going to say that there are a lot of tie-ins, listlessness.
That's our music. That's our sign that we have to go. But this is fascinating. I want to thank both our guests today, Dr. Cynthia Rudert, an international expert in celiac disease, who is medical advisor for the Celiac Disease Foundation and the Gluten Intolerance Group of America, and whose practice is based in Atlanta. Also, Claudine Krangle, who I sadly had to cut off, is the author of Living Well with Celiac Disease, and you can find out more about everything she has to say when you get her book on Amazon, just out in its second edition, and it's a real favorite among celiacs. Next week, our topic will be the fertility industry, and joining us will be Dr. Elena Christofidis, an endocrinologist who is based in Columbus, Ohio. You can visit me online at sarahhealth.com, and remember, you are not alone. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Sarah Health Radio. To contact Dr. Rosenthal or one of her guests for more information, visit sarahhealth.com. Tune in next Thursday for another hour of Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal.